It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, my good friend Greg Tibnen visited in. His oldest daughter graduating from the University of Arizona as an architect, where she's building, bunkers. No, I don't know what she'll be doing. But, you know, we got a lot of hopes for her. She's a very, very smart, libertarian-oriented individual with a great brain on her shoulders. Her and Sierra are going to save the planet. And William Bupert, he's editor and publisher of Zero, Z-E-R-O-G-O-V, ZeroGov.com. He's also a former retired, well, not former retired, but retired Army officer. That's, the quiet professional. But he's not being so quiet as an individual. He's coming out and he's saying, look, man, we got to get ready. Now, what's great about having Greg in is that he's on the Lone Prairie. He's actually out been for a decade living in his straw bale house, coated concrete, raising chicken. I mean, how many chickens did you, before you left to come out here, you had to buy some chicks, for your business there and so on for them to make. How many did you have to get?
About 1,000.
1,000 chickens, okay? 1,000. I got 19. So I'm like, and 3 goats. I got some goats. How many goats you have?
I don't know, around 40 or so.
How many cows?
About 18.
We're going to go there to not starve, okay? That's, it's like, hey, man, come on in, get behind the plow, Ernie, we're all over it. And you've been able to do this relatively inexpensively. I mean, when you went, you knew that I have skills, we'll do labor, we'll survive. So I'm going, but why would we need to do this, Bill? I mean, having these skills and the knowledge that he has, and already the mindset that he had is what made him successful there. I mean, he could have, had more whiz bangs and electronics or whatever. But I mean, you survive a decade, 4 seasons in Missouri and floods and all this other stuff, and you have herds that grow and you got some value and you're not going to starve. I say you win, okay? And if it gets down to as bad as we think it's going to get and you have this, he's going to be the rich SOB in comparison.
I think Greg will be. And we have 9 acres in southern Arizona, and we had 16 plus 20 when we were up in North Idaho. And we also live the rural, I'm hesitant to say self-sufficiency because there's no such thing. As Greg has probably noticed, I'm being presumptuous, Greg, when I say this. There are no islands out there because you're going to have in a small community like Greg's or mine, you're going to have experts on gardening. You're going to have experts on animal husbandry. You're going to have experts on milk. You're going to have experts on eggs. No one person can be that Renaissance man who has all the answers and can live by themselves with their family on an island. Whether it's security considerations, animal husbandry considerations, veterinary, food processing, whatever the case may be, in these small rural communities, you have a host of people who have unbelievable skill sets.
Stay with the mic, man.
That they've been practicing with themselves and with others, maybe even over generations. But I don't want to let Greg steal all the fire, by the way. This is a segue. My son Kyle is graduating from the University of Idaho, Moscow on Saturday, the same day as Greg's daughter is. He is the guy who brought me to anarchism from minarchism, and he will have a mechanical engineering degree. So that's an unpaid advertisement for my kin.
I've been all on my kids. I'm going, man, learn engineering, how to lay brick, go to school. One of my sons is getting his degree in engineering. I'm just going, look, man, if you're not making, building, manufacturing, doing something, You're just prey.
I told Kyle if he pursues alternative energy, which he's interested in, he must leave these United States to practice that, because the Environmental Protection Agency, despite what they give lip service to, will do everything they can to strangle all alternative energy sources in their cradle. You
know,
watch.
What, you know what I heard the big problem with wind energy now is?
Birds.
No. It's even better. They are now claiming that the whirring, the turning of these blades, creates some kind of frequency that causes some kind of human problem. Going, you know, never mind, man. I just don't even want to hear anymore. I don't care anymore. I'm just...
I guarantee whatever it causes, if you put foil on your head, under your hat, it will protect you.
Well, this, and he's probably half serious. The and you know, so this what is the sickness that has brought us to this? I mean, for us to even be discussing this,
government,
and how are we going to cure ourselves off of that? I mean, you're not going to have the government institutions, you know, the mandatory youth indoctrination camps, you know, their camp leader up there telling them what the Big Bubba is saying, but the internet is cracking through that. The next generation of these kids. You know, I they hate when I call them kids and they're 22 or something like that. Well, they're young, okay? But they're way smarter than we were at that age. I mean, they are so much more informed.
Ernie, I have to tell you, and I think this is another program's subject matter, which we shouldn't delve into today, but I do think that this constant and perennial electronic tethering of these last three generations is going to cripple them cognitively. But that's not something that... It'll take us off track today, but I really think that... There's a yin and a yang to the internet. There was a recent news magazine on which the cover was a picture of a man's head in a block of ice, in which they said that it's causing us to have paralysis and brain freeze because of the surfeit of information that we have. We have so much information, people can't take decisions on which direction to go cognitively. So I think that's another subject.
You know, I understand your point, and Greg can really talk to this because, you know, he has up on the farm. Dial up.
I mean, when it works.
When it works. So we got dial up on the farm. And I'm going, okay. Your two girls are homeschooled. They work on the farm. They pursue their own interest. And I'm wondering,
ours are homeschooled too.
How are they affected by limited access to this trunk of unlimited information? You know, I mean, of course they enjoy it and they access it and they use it for whatever, but what do they do to intellectually stimulate themselves?
Read books.
They do have books, and we buy books, and we use the internet to buy books, unfortunately, because there's no bookstores near us. But my girls read a lot. They have their own interests. They do artwork. They do use dial-up a lot, and a couple times a week they'll go into town to McDonald's with their laptop computers and use the high-speed connection, and they've been known to sit there for up to 8 hours, and... I don't know how they can take sitting down for 8 hours, but they do, not very often. But they have all kinds of their own interests, and they have neighbors around us who are always happy to share information, and neighbors do help each other. It was mentioned earlier about neighbors helping neighbors. We buy our milk. It's a federal crime, but we buy criminal milk, which is really good. And we trade criminal meat, and we do sell chickens, and we think that's legal, but we're not real sure. We just don't worry about it because we're selling them to the local cops too, so we don't worry too much. But every time we drive out our driveway, it's a federal crime because we're crossing a wetland.
Oh, man. It just, where does it stop?
It doesn't until it collapses, until the government collapses, and most likely it will collapse under its own contradictions, much like Marx would say would happen to capitalism. But of course, unfortunately, the Soviet Union collapsed before these United States did. But, it is absolutely inevitable when you look at everything we described earlier.
We'll go for the same reasons.
You've been discussing this on your show for months, if not years, all these factors that lead to this collapse that is absolutely inevitable. And it is the hubris and what Hayek would refer to as a fatal conceit on the part of the federal government that's going to lead them over that edge. Much like lemmings, they are going to go over that edge because they won't stop at the cliff. They'll keep going out of their own momentum and inertia.
You would think that they'd see the cliff. And all of a sudden the talking heads kind of stand to the side and start ushering you over the cliff. And we're going to try to avoid the cliff. But what is the cliff? How do you recognize it? Who's trying to throw you over it? What's the benefit to them for it? And how do you just avoid the whole thing and go to the Scottish Highlands and just chill. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But first, I know William Bell wants to go in and talk about this minarchist thing. Is there such a thing? Can you have a small government? And Greg will put a bumper sticker on.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And you can always depend on propaganda. Life is so hard, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy.
All right, what we're doing here is that... if you're watching the video, you're live streaming. We have the Wendy's commercial where it had, I never knew this one existed. You know, Bill's telling me, he's going, you gotta see this, man. And what it is it has these guys that are they're going to the field, this open field, and just plummeting themselves into this abyss, this big hole out in the field. And you know, and how do you get that? How does that happen? Propaganda. So, you know, I'm like, okay, I get it, you know. But, you know, it's been going on for a long time. And I've been influenced by a lot of people that were, they were not as susceptible to this kind of stuff. So I'm going, okay, why were they not susceptible? And why are so many? And I got to ask William, Bill, because I always see his name, William, you know, spelled out on the internet. But Bill, why is it that you have so many people that are so willing to give up of themselves over to this entity, this social contract that I never even saw, much less signed? And what's the cure? So, I mean, if you're looking at this, you woke up, you know, your son goes, hey, Dad, man, come on. You're killing me here.
Wake
you
up.
Know? So well, what was his motivation to even say that, and how did he come to the realization?
Let me answer the first question first, if I may, and I think that fear, Stefan Molyneux has done a brilliant video. It's like 13 minutes long, called The History of Your Enslavement, in which he talks about why fear is the primary way that the government has started the entire thing. Now, how does it maintain this fiction that we need someone else with a gun, as Mark Stevens would say, to deliver our goods and services? Well, that would be the job of the government education complex and the government media complex and television and radio stations and internet and all of it. The complex of those various factors, I think, is what leads us to think this. But up until the 18th century, William Wilberforce stood up in the parliament and said, you know what? Slavery is wrong, and the ownership of chattel slaves and the ownership of other human beings in chattel slavery, bondage slavery, is wrong. He was laughed out of the parliament for the first few years. By the start of the 19th century, the English had made the slave trade illegal and started to make slavery an immoral imperative. We had abolitionists here in America who said, you know, owning other people is wrong. Well, we did get rid of chattel slavery, but now what we're left with is tax slavery, regulatory slavery, and government slavery. I used to be a minarchist myself. Hi, my name is Bill. I used to be a minarchist. But what minarchism comes down to is that it's a belief in limited government. It's a belief in unicorns. It's a belief in the paranormal. It's a belief in things that have not ever, nor will, nor now exist. There is no such thing. My standard offer to everybody is that I'll buy you dinner at Ruth's Chris, if you like, if you'll show me one historical precedent of a government limited itself in the fashion that from its embryonic stage up through all stages of its growth, it actually limited itself. It hasn't happened. Greg and I had a brief conversation concerning the Constitution, and Greg points out, as I'm aware of, that in the first 10 years after ratification in 1791, we had taxes levied on land, on slaves, on documents, on all those things that we revolted over and divorced from the United Kingdom from in the first place, in the first 10 years. And then after that, it simply ramped up exponentially.
Yeah, it's just a matter of degree once you, you know, concede the principle.
Well, it's amperage on the vacuum cleaner connected to your wallet and your soul. that's what it all comes down to.
Amperage on your soul. Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. You know, one thing, you know what, you know, we were talking off air earlier in the first hour, and Greg says, okay, if you'll make this one bumper sticker, I'll put it on my car. You know, tell us what it is.
It will say, vote for Ron Paul, the least evil.
You know, but then you're still advocating voting, huh, you minarchist? But that's a sign he wants to share. Minarchist. The, you know, one thing, other person that, you know, really I didn't realize, because I got to know him, Butler Schaefer was...
Brilliant.
Mark Victor's mentor is one of his law professors when he went to law school. And from our first Freedom Summit, he's been speaking for a long time, but keep in mind, our first Freedom Summit was 3 weeks after 9/11, and we knew it was coming. You know, we're just, you know, Bumper Hornberger spoke, Bob Levy, Gato spoke, Don Brudeau, you know, this is our first year, you know. So we're going, Clint Bullock from Institute for Justice at the time, you know, we're just going, yeah, you know, give us what for, because we know here it comes. And Vince Cernowitz was kind of on, you know, had a lot to say about it too. And what was interesting was this whole concept of government in general. Watch it expand exponentially. What, here it come, has nothing to do, blah, 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 blah. They got all kinds of stuff on the shelves they're going to dust off. And it's how do you think the Patriot Act got accumulated and written and passed in the thousands of pages and boom, done? Well, you think they just made that up? Man, it was on a shelf. They were trying to get that stuff through the Clinton administration. Well, now it's under the Republicans. Well, I'm going, this is not, we knew where this was going to go. We're almost there. And I'm wondering what are going to be the telltale signs of us seeing the actual finishing disintegration. Is it going to be the repudiation of the dollar? Is it going to be the revolt of the people here? Is it going to be the left coming up with austerity, austerity, we need more goodies? Is it going to be the tax the rich thing? Is it going to be manufacturing just leaving? What's the first thing in that cascade that you think is going to, you know, be the signal?
The easy answer to that is that it's going to be a black swan event. Nassim Tlaib has told us that the black swan, for which he wrote a book, is an event that when we look back, it all sort of makes sense. But at the time, it was completely unexpected. I think that it's going to be, and this is the cheater way to get out of what you're asking me to describe as which of those cascades, it's going to be a combination of a few or all of those, because that's the way history works. History is all about cause and effect, and it's very easy for us to look back, but it's very difficult for us to know what's going to happen with what Clausewitz would refer to as friction, the fog of war, the fog of action and events, in which what would have happened if Robert E. Lee's map that he wrapped his cigars in that was discovered by the Union days before Gettysburg occurred, what if they had paid attention to that? They didn't. There's a number of historical incidents just like that where we think, well, why didn't they take advantage of it? I think that that in combination with general government incompetence and the ratcheting up of one of my personal peccadilloes right now, the cop nation that we live in, is going to make things get worse, worse, and worse. Because we live in a country now, think about this, Ernie. If it weren't for cops and tax collectors, would we be where we are? If there weren't law and forces, would we be where we are?
Okay, now that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. That's what this whole thing is building up to. Who's the tip of the spear for the new empire world order of the whatever? You know, where does that come from? These guys, the men in black with the shields and the batons and the tasers and the microwaves and the sound weapons and the acoustical, we're going to rule you people. And how do you resist? Should you? We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I'm just a gigolo. I'm for sale. I'm for sale for the highest bidder. But you know what? Nobody wants to give me any money because I don't put out. You know, the only thing I want to do, I just want to be left alone, you know? And my wife's got dibs on that one. And she's with me on this. We're just trying to be left alone. Are you allowed to be left alone? No. So this is one thing, you know, off air, we've been talking about this. This is what this last half hour is going to be about, and I want to share this with you. Secession. You know, that's where this is probably going to go. Secession as an individual, secession as a group. Heck, we got Southern Arizona wants to secede to be more communist. I mean, so I'm just going, you know, whatever. You know, am I allowed to leave? Am I good? You know, as an individual, can I go over, just sit here on my little farmlet and we're good? You know, probably not. Then you have, you know, who's going to take Ron Paul's place? My first response was, you know, one, you know, I mean, he's around, he's a healthy guy, you know, he's having fun, but, you know, he's not going to be around forever. So you think somebody like his son Rand or somebody's going to take it, or somebody else out there? I'm of the opinion that nobody's going to take his place, nor should anybody take his place. There shouldn't be a place to take. We should take his place as individuals for ourselves. That's what this whole thing is about. If you need to be led to freedom, well, then you're not going to be free once you get there anyway, because somebody's always controlling you, calling it freedom. You know, so I'm just, you know, end discussion on that.
If you have to convince somebody to be free, do they deserve it?
I don't think they could even sustain it, you know, or even understand it if you got to do that. And one thing that Bill said, he goes, you know, the Constitution, get back to the Constitution, you got to do the Constitution. He goes, you know, that's where the end began. Explain yourself on that one.
What that means is that in 1791, when the Constitution was ratified, we hear a lot of noise, especially from the right and the supposed individualist and non-interventionist individualist, that if we go back to the original Constitution, everything will be set right and we'll be on the yellow brick road to salvation and self-sufficiency. Nay, nay, bunny rabbit. That Constitution was built from the beginning as a blueprint and a doomsday machine to build the biggest government this earth has ever seen. And that's what we have. And some people will say, well, Bill, I think that's wrong. To which I will quote, and I paraphrase, Lysander Spooner, if the Constitution is such that it can't prevent what has been done, or it has actually advocated it because it's been done, then for either one of those, it doesn't even deserve to exist.
And there's a replacement? I mean, is there such a document? Is there a consolidation of, you know, we're together to end off what?
It speaks to the biggest problem we have, which is the fact that people think that we need government in the first place. Limited government doesn't exist, hasn't existed, will never exist, because once a government has the ability to have a monopoly of force and it can fine, cage, maim, and kill those people who resist, and provide the regulatory framework and the taxation framework, and the cops, the law enforcers, who will enforce these things, that is the end has begun then. That's when everything is going to go in the direction that we have gone in today, which is bigger and bigger government and bigger slave states, which is where we live now.
Okay, we're in this, how do you put it, battered wife syndrome, okay? And how do you break free of that? And if you do, are you just going to, you know, jump into another relationship, which is usually what happens, okay, and usually just as bad or worse? Or, you know, like some people, they just don't like being battered, and they say, no, I'm done. Well, it brings to mind one thing I just found out is some people, there was a young man I had on from the Netherlands somewhere, or some recently freed Eastern Bloc country or something, that would give you an international passport. It was, I'm a citizen to nobody passport. So it was a couple of months ago he was on, and we talked about it and how he did it and why and all that kind of stuff. I found out that here in America, you cannot give up your passport and your U.S. citizenship unless you're going on another farm. You don't want to be U.S. livestock, well, gosh darn it, you better be signing up to be somebody else's livestock.
We have to have a state destination, whether it be Uruguay or Croatia or something like that, in order to actually go to the embassy and renounce your U.S. citizenship. And by the way, the renouncement of your U.S. citizenship is the only way we have, as Americans, to cut that umbilical cord, that tentacle from the IRS to ourselves. There's no other way to do it because, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we can go work in Afghanistan, we can go work in Africa, we can go work in bloody Antarctica. The IRS will still follow you, and because you are a U.S. citizen, they will still have the capability to extract whatever amount of wealth they wish from you.
Wow. The amazing part of that is that they care so much that I have that I have to be on somebody else's farm. I mean, what it betrays is the idea and the concept. It's not about, you know, America, MK America. It's about being on the grid. It's about being in the system, some plantation, not necessarily even yours.
Because a nation state is nothing more than a tax jurisdiction. Nation state is a fancy, patriotic, flag waving, and histrionic way to describe a tax jurisdiction. And it's also a way to drive people to fight for said tax jurisdictions with other tax jurisdictions. If people could get it in their skulls that what's happened is that their entire freedom and liberty has been expropriated as a result of their refusing to refuse, as a result of their corroboration, their collaboration, and their fear, if we can find some way to step away from that on a mass base, we can make progress to less or zero government. Until that time, though, the zero government folks out there, the anarchists, the however you want to describe them, will always be outnumbered.
Okay. All right. I'll give you a good example. Greg, when you had... how much time we got? Let's spend a little bit of time on this into this segment. One, you had the Rachel, beautiful woman that is graduating now, is from your first marriage. You had a second marriage. He goes, you know what? I want to get somebody that's not as U.S. American spoiled. So he goes to the Philippines to find a wife. And she, man, she's all over this, you know, slaughtering chickens. Heck yeah, that's what you do, man. That's how you get dinner. You
know? No, not quite.
But anyway, so you have a marriage now that is, she's much more appreciative of, you know, what you've accumulated and had here, I would imagine. You have two young children. And I remember when it was in the 90s, when you first had your children, that you claimed them as dependents, but they didn't have Social Security numbers. And then you went through the IRS back and forth and so on. Just give us a brief story of how that came out and what happened.
Well, we had to get passports for them, and therefore we had to have socialist security numbers. Okay, I mean social security numbers, excuse me. And we brought the children in with us to the socialist security office, and with the birth certificates, which the midwife had filled out when children were born. And they refused to accept that my children were real and give them numbers because they had never been in the medical establishment. So I then had to take them to a friend of mine who was an MD and plunk them down on his counter and say, are they real? Will you write up a medical thing saying that they're really children? Which he found quite entertaining and was more than happy to write a medical report saying he did a checkup on them. And then we could get Social Security numbers to get passports to get them out of the country if we needed to. But I didn't actually go to the Philippines looking for a wife, and my wife is not much different than many others. She doesn't actually like to kill chickens. She likes to eat the chickens. She will help, though.
I'm sorry.
Does your wife also have, does she retain a Filipino passport or not?
No. When she became an American citizen back in 2001, she was forced to renounce her citizenship. And the Philippines is one of the only countries besides the USA which does not allow dual citizenship. However, the Philippines did change their laws, and now she is once again a Filipino citizen because she was born there.
That's not correct if you check the dual citizenship of certain members, high-ranking members of this administration and others over the past 100 years.
Israel! Yeah, I know where that's going. We've been living this for a long time. This is how I've... lots of experience in that we've already been made aware of. Hopefully you can avoid it. We'll talk about it more when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
From government, can't get no satisfaction from government, you know, I get it from myself and my friends. You know, that's one thing I wanted to make sure in the last segment here that we kind of dwelled on a little bit. You know, we've been talking about a lot of things, and And it was great that Greg, you know, had an opportunity to come in and say, hey, and, you know, and Doreen, love you, baby. You know, sorry. No, it's our wives that put up with us and make all this possible, you know, hi, kids. You know, I wanted to make sure that in this last segment that we're talking about, you know, what's next. Because if we, one thing you're saying, will we be able to insulate ourselves from any collective force, you know, somebody beating us over the head because they love us, okay? And I'm going, you know, I see people that advocate for government like they're like magnets, all right? And government's like metal filings. And you know, you sprinkle the government, you know, out there, the magnets attract them and they get these fields of influence and they kind of try to suck you into it. And the more powerful the government is, the magnet, the bigger the fields are and so on. And do you got to do away with the government, the metal filings, or is it the magnets, the people? I have always focused on the people, the magnet. You'll change them and these metal filings just kind of have nothing to consolidate or attract to. You know, it's you'll just change us in the mirror kind of thing, man in the mirror. So what is the most effective way of doing that? Well, you want to give them just education, you know, what's going to happen. You kind of give them a little bit of clairvoyancy. You look into the future, you do the Dr. Paul thing, you know, the anarchist thing, you know, this is how the world works thing. And then when it happens, they go, oh, I made the connection. I see what caused this demise of my standard of living. I don't want to do that again. Well, how do you do that? Well, you talk to people, you write on zerogov.com, and you advocate for this. You know, Stefan Molyneux does a good job. We try to do a good job here. You know, Greg has had a big influence on me over the decades. So this has been the mechanism by which we have done this in the past. When it goes down, who, what is going to be the people that will stand up and say, I have a solution for you, and they start reconsolidating government again? That is the real battle, because the justification for government, its abusiveness, its growth, its expense, its enslavement for multiple generations with debt, that is all going to be, it's going to fall of its own weight to be reconstituted again. How do we prevent that, Bill?
Well, in 1989, we had the Soviet Union start its collapse, which took about 2 years. And then we had, I think, between 17 and 19 nation states calve off from mostly the southern parts of the country then. The problem with all of this is that in 1917, when the Russian Revolution started, Woodrow Wilson started his own Soviet-style revolution here in these United States. They were both the starting blocks. A minor player also was the Mexican PRI, which was also surprisingly consonant with the way the Marxists took over the Soviet Union. Wilson and Lenin took off out of the starting blocks. Well, the Russians lost in 1989. We got the gold medal for the perfect Soviet Union. We are a Soviet state when you think about it. What's happened in Russia since then has been rather ugly, but it hasn't really enhanced the ability of people to finally wake up and say, enough is enough. I've had my fill of government, because government, as you've said, always tends to fill the void. So it's an undiscovered country as far as what's going to happen here, but here's what we do know. We know two things. Number one, the inevitable economic collapse of the United States is a certainty. None of us in this room right here have the crystal ball to say when that's going to
be. Well, you know, I would say the dollar. Now, the United States, they'll continue to, you know, occupy the Capitol, and they'll have guys with flags, and they'll be having voting, and they'll, you know, keep it. But, I mean, the dollar, gone. Now, how that equates to the U.S. government, I don't really know. I'm not sure how they're going to make the disconnection there.
Well, but look how they're tentacled in every nook and cranny, from local to federal, I was going to say offices throughout these United States. They do have a vested interest and a vested way of having their power transmitted. But I really think that once the secession starts, it's going to take one state or one county, Pima County, for their collectivists. Wet dream that they have. It's going to take one state to go. Once that one state goes, whether it be Texas, Idaho, Alaska, whatever it may be, Katie, bar the door. Because I'll tell you what, there is going to be a cavalcade of states and smaller political subsidiaries that are going to leave if they can finally, having thrown the rider, being the federal government, they're going to bolt and they're going to go in their own direction. Now, what will these create? on the coast, we had this conversation off air, on the coast, they'll still have their little Marxist dystopias that they'll form around themselves, like the American Northeast or in California, Washington.
Manhattan.
Oregon, yes, that. But I'll bet you'll have confederations and states sort of like maybe Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, where freedom is going to be a watchword more so than you would find elsewhere. So amazingly, 50 or more states, having thrown off these federal tethers, are all going to be very interesting political experiments in self-organization, whether they do what the bi-coastal areas are going to do, whether they adopt a limited government stance, and I put that in quotation marks because, like unconstitutional and constitutional, I think it has no descriptive value whatsoever. Maybe one or two of those experiments, though, will lead to people saying, you know what, it's time to either ratchet back or eliminate it entirely. And it also, you know, we've got patient zero in the room right now with us. It's Greg. Greg is the one who put the anarchist meme in your head. Is that presumptuous?
Yeah, one of the first, yeah.
And my son is the one who did it for me. It happens one person at a time. It's going to happen over time. In this room, we may all be dust before people finally say, you know what, good God, what were they thinking by having government saddled over there? It could be hundreds of years from now where people be looking back at history and they're going to say, for 5,000 years, those people were demented. They were in some kind of psychosis where they thought that people had to be there to whip them.
It has to go through a process. And the one process that I can see is that's why they call it revolution. It just keeps coming around. And they keep doing it because it keeps working. You know, if they go, let's see, we got to wag the dog here and change the lead, get the story off the front page and so on. So when Obama, you know, I get a call from one of my writers and he goes, Ernie, he goes, Obama's going to make an announcement from the White House. He's breaking into Donald Trump's show. And I go, all right, it's time to start looking around you. You know, I mean, what are they distracting from? We got the birth and the school records of Obama. That was becoming a joke. You know, it released a layered, you know, illustrator thing. I mean, come on. Then you have silver and the economy. You have, are we invading Syria or Iran? I mean, what the heck? You know, let's look around first before we get so focused on whatever the heck he's going to announce. And it was the Osama thing. So I'm going, look around. 2 hours before that, silver had taken $6 dump in 15 minutes. And I'm going, somebody's playing something, okay? So it's always change the lead. There's always going to be a distraction. There's always going to be look over here and shiny objects and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's
going to be prepared to ignore that and focus on important stuff and what is important?
Traditional magic is misdirection. Our government is magical in that way. They are constantly trying to misdirect and evade and distract us from seeing what the main mission is. And the main mission is for us, whatever we produce as human beings, whether it be intellectual, whether it be actual labor, whatever it is, we should be the ones who first and foremost sign the contract, acknowledge our own self-ownership, and consent to nothing without our own personal signature on that, whatever that may be.
Yeah, and who's going to enforce that philosophy? Individuals have to. But if you don't, whatever collective you're going to have, you're not going to have a collective around there not being a collective. That's just not going to happen. That's what was the promise, though. The promise was the only reason we're going to be here is we're going to protect your individual right to be left absolutely alone. That's our promise. We pinky swear. Here we go. Boom. You give us the authority and the power and the military and the police force and the monopoly of and all this. You know what we're going to do? We're going to use this entire process to protect you from people that would take that collective power and rule you.
And scum rises to the top.
And how'd that work out for us? So I'm going, hopefully, over the last few years, we've seen that there's been a nucleus of Generation Next around the world, the planet. That's why we're doing this Egypt thing. You know, in Arabic, all of this stuff we translate into Arabic. And I'm going, there is an entire Generation Next across this planet that has the opportunity, the knowledge, and the resources, the wealth of information like ZeroGov.com, to where they can use the material to make the case for themselves and to others that none of the above is better than any of the above options.
And we practice anarchy every day of our lives in our private lives.
Yeah. No. I check the government form, tell me what I'm going to do in the morning. And, well, hopefully you're not. It's been a great day. Thanks for coming in, Greg. We'll see you tomorrow.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Tour.